Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 133 of the MTB podcast, presented and hosted by Worldwide Cyclery. I am Jeff.
I'm Trevor.
And I'm Liam.
We are not with Jared today because he is out. Well, he says he's sick.
But says he has a flu.
What is he really doing?
He's
probably trying to watch all of the Lord of the Rings extended editions in a row. That's what I would do if I was sick.
That's a good sick day activity.
Yeah.
I love Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's like the best trilogy.
So it's just us today, and we're going to talk about all things mountain bikes and hopefully provide some useful mountain bike knowledge to all of you mountain bikers out there. I'm just trying to stuff the word mountain bike in here more frequently for search engine optimization.
Mountain bike.
I like bikes.
Let's see. We've got a ton of listener questions, as always, and we're getting a little bit more in-depth with these questions. They're a little bit more long and complex,
you could say. Pretty long-winded these days.
So, yeah, thanks for sending those in. Keep sending them in. Whether they're simple or complex, we will do our best to get to the best ones.
Also, I have a request for people sending in questions. Also, send in some more funny ones. It's been a while.
Yeah, we're a little light on the funny questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can ask whatever you want, by the way. No one's going to get offended in any way, shape, or form by anything. If anything, we'll just
and if it is not
crack up
PG-13 for the podcast, we will laugh internally. We might write you back, and it just won't make the podcast. Mm-hmm. So
we keep it light around here.
Yeah, keep sending them in.
Keep sending them in to podcast@worldwidecyclery.com. So let's start off with Zach's words of wisdom. It costs nothing to be nice.
Wow.
That's just the truth.
That is the truth.
I try to live by that motto.
And, you know, when you are a customer support guy, that's even more obvious that people could be nicer to you. So be nice to people.
Especially the customer support staff. Yeah. Because there's probably not their issue.
And
probably
people,
someone else's issue.
And the people making your food.
That too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Those are the people who I'm nice to.
Yeah. I always got upset with when you're on the phone with customer servers and you hear someone on the other line just getting super angry and irate, and it's like, it's not worth it. It's like, it's not their problem, or it's their problem, but it's not their fault.
Although I was almost losing it yesterday trying to get in contact with FedEx in an automated system. Mm-hmm. I wasn't mad at a human. I was mad at the automated system was making me put in a tracking number, and every time I'd say it, they would read it back to me wrong.
You should just typed it in.
How do you do that on your phone?
It has letters.
It has a Z in it.
Yeah. You say an E or a D?
Exactly. Z. Yeah.
Z for zebra.
And I was getting frustrated. I'm like, you know. Yeah, I think there's a meme that says, you know, the real you comes out when you ask for the you ask for a real human. You start
Give me a real human.
I heard you can just press a bunch of zeros and it'll just go straight to
sometimes that works.
The automator.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not always easy. But, you know, when you are talking to a real human, just be nice.
Be nice.
Because it costs nothing to be nice. Daniel's fun fact. Why don't you read it off, Trevor?
Lake Superior holds 10% of the planet's fresh water. 10% of the fresh water is a lot. I guess fresh water, yeah. Ocean water is not fresh water.
Do you know what the biggest Great Lake is?
Nope. I was going to guess, but I do not know.
It's Lake Superior because it's Superior.
Well, I guess that would make sense if it's the fact and it's holding 10% of Earth's water.
Yeah. Probably I'm actually not 100% sure that is the biggest Great Lake, but I'm like, a multiple choice, I would guess that one.
Yeah, I would say.
This podcast is not fact checked. neither are Daniel's fun facts. Someone just pastes them onto this document
and just blindly trusts him.
I have gone to.
Blindly says them.
I have gone to the Niagara Falls before, though, and it's pretty mind blowing how much water is going through that waterfall at any moment.
Have you been there? Wild. Yeah,
it absolutely blew me away of the force that it is from, and that's from a Great Lake too, so
pretty
impressive.
Cool. Definitely is. Also impressive is this fantastic testimonial. Raced the Tennessee Enduro this weekend with the B team, and what an awesome group of guys. Had a blast with them, and they were ripping. Wow.
Nice. So that's more a testimonial to the B team, but not to us.
I guess so. Okay. Well, we sponsor and support the B team.
We do,
So that counts. Supporting some amateur enduro racing out there.
I just made them all new jerseys.
Yeah, they look pretty good. Kettle Wayward jersey, but custom screen printed for the B team.
Nice.
So pretty cool. They were stoked. Yeah, Matt video called me wearing that thing yesterday in his bathroom. Just going on and on about... I didn't see below the waist, so who knows.
Was he going to what the else bathroom?
He was wearing. Yeah, he was sitting on the toilet wearing the jersey, like, dude, these things are sick. These came out so nice. He's pumped. So, yeah, stoked to support the B team and some amateur in racing out there. Speaking of amateur racing, I actually watched the Tennessee National on the, it was like the Windrock Bike Park YouTube mm-hmm. channel. Did you see that?
Yeah. I did not see that.
I just caught like the, so some of the highlight reels. Yeah, it's really like, it's done really well.
Yeah.
I was telling you, that guy I was with last week does it. He's head of production of all that. So he does that. He does the U.S. Open. He's going to do the whole Monster Energy Cup that's coming.
Yeah.
Live broadcast, all of them. And he's the announcer too.
Yeah, I saw the YouTube recommendation and I clicked on it. I was like, this looks like something I would watch on Discovery Channel. It's just like well done.
It's as good as Crankworks.
Yeah, totally. Really? Awesome. It was really cool. Like they covered the whole race. They had a bunch of the footage pretty much all the footage from all the racers and an announcer that ran you through the things, bike checks. Like it was like, this is great. It was like an hour long.
That's rad.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's free on YouTube.
I've never seen a mountain bike race covered that well from and just Windrock Bike Park YouTube channel. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's not. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, right, I guess it's a national, but still it's not a World Cup. It's not a Crankworx event. Like not a Red Bull event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
US downhill is resurging.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty rad.
I thought it was really well done. I was really impressed. Well, the next segment we have here is bikes and rides we've been enjoying lately and or anything and everything we're excited about. So I put my new El Jefe, which I've been talking about for weeks now, still.
It's in process.
It's getting built.
Still has no wheels. Titanium. Hardtail from Revel Bikes, designed for 120 mil travel fork, right? But I'm putting a rigid carbon Envy fork on
it. 100 mil adjusted, but once you put a hardtail on and you're at sag, it's going to be roughly the same as where this bike's going to sit.
Yeah.
Hardtail at sag?
Or the fork at sag? Mm-hmm. You mean a suspension fork at sag?
Hardtail at sag, fork at sag.
Hardtail at sag.
I think it could be either, right? Kind of?
Yeah, I guess it's technically still sag.
Yeah.
Still sag. Yeah, it's going to be a gravel bike for me.
Flat bar gravel
which, bike, also known as a rigid mountain bike.
I've been doing a lot of thinking locally what's faster because we don't have these long Arizona, Kansas, even like Eastern Colorado roads where you're like on a true gravel road for a long time. We're basically riding straight up, straight down fire roads. And it's like, does a drop bar gravel bike actually make any sense here? Or is a flat bar rigid bike like yours overall faster? I don't know.
I mean, I just think it's also more fun and enjoyable to ride on flat bars.
Yeah, that's your opinion. Yeah. But I'm just talking about PCH, overall speed.
If you're just riding along PCH, the drop bars are great.
Nice aero. But you're only on there for like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
top. And then you shoot back up.
Yeah.
That your El Jefe is going to look rad when it comes out. I can't wait for people to see that. I've just seen it being built up, and it's a looker for sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely unique.
It's going to be a cool, unique bike. I just think, I mean, having that Salsa Cutthroat, that was just such a fun bike to have with flat bars. It was like, wow, a really lightweight, rigid mountain bike is just super fun to have. It's like useful. You can put together these rides on it that you would never really do on a normal mountain bike and you wouldn't do on a gravel bike or a road bike. And just a cool, fun, unique, enjoyable bike. So I would highly suggest everyone build one just for funsies.
Are you going to use that or a Ranger for your adventure races?
The Ranger.
Ranger just for comfort.
Yeah, because adventure races too, you're just so fatigued and sleep deprived half the time that having suspension is just safety. Yeah. You can kind of space out or look down at your compass and then like smash into a rock and be okay when you have suspension. Yeah. On a rigid bike, you know, there's no forgiveness on that stuff. So yeah, I'll definitely be on the Ranger. I'm also excited about these DJI videos. So I was lucky enough to get in contact with DJI, and that's the company most well-known for their drones, which we have one. What did we have, Lou Dog? Mavic Mini. That thing's sweet. But they also now have a GoPro competitor, an action camera. Well, I think they've had it for a little while, but it's interesting to see. There's a couple different companies that are really nipping at the heels of GoPro, and pretty good stuff. So yeah, they're going to sponsor a couple of videos. We're going to review the camera, compare it to a GoPro, let mountain bikers know how it works on a mountain bike for a mountain biker. And I don't know, I'm just stoked. It's like forced creativity.
We're selling out, baby.
Selling out.
Not in the podcast yet.
Should be cool though. DJI makes pretty legit stuff. So
yeah, they really do.
What they come up with.
Well, it's stuff we actually use, right?
Yeah.
It's not like we're just, you know, taking some random sponsor.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cool things that I could just mention about that, but I'll save it for making a YouTube video about it. But one of the things I thought right off the bat, which was just a really cool feature that is kind of unique to them, is all of the color grading and footage. You can mash it perfectly to all the DJI drones. It's like, that's a really good idea, because a lot of people use a DJI drone and the color's totally different than whatever else they're filming it on. I was like, oh, that's a smart
pretty
move.
Obvious too.
That's why that's just like a very obvious shoe-in of a really good advantage, because they're kind of the market
my
leader
whole camera system.
Yeah.
Both of them, to get the same sensor on both.
Yep. You're going full Fuji.
Fuji.
So,
Fuji film.
So fancy. What Fuji's?
It's actually not that fancy. X-T3 body and then an X-70 little body.
Yeah.
It's pretty standard stuff. Not cool. Not fancy.
Should be pretty exciting.
Yeah. Not like my new bike.
Your new ASR.
Which is as fancy as it gets.
That thing is bougie.
I know, it's over the top.
That's the first bike I've seen that has no cable ports on the frame. Well, it has that one on the left side. But if you look at it on the drive side, there's no cable ports anywhere on the frame. That, it's cool. That's aesthetically pleasing to look at.
Actually, Revel Bikes made a road bike in 2018 or 19 called the Pure Road, or the PR, which was access only back then. Didn't catch on any.
Under the Revel name or the Y-Cycles name?
Okay, sorry, Y-Cycles name.
Okay. So it was Thai?
Yeah.
Huh.
Thai bike, 32 mil tire clearance, and it was called the PR, Pure Road, and was only for Axis, and they said it was their worst selling bike ever.
They were just a little late to the party.
I think they're
a little early to the party.
I think they're a little early to the party, and I also think, I told them they should make it now with 38 mil tire clearance and call it an all-road bike, and they'd sell the shit out of them.
Especially now with Axis stuff being so prevalent and being user friendly.
But I got a personal ASR build after riding the demo that we had for the past month. I went bougie. I got the ASR T5 Ultimate build. Because one, I want to try the fly attendant. Two, we're going to make some content on it, so it will be multi-purpose, and I didn't just go out and ball out because I'm balling. It's not the case.
You're balling. By the way, for context, we're talking about a Yeti Cycles ASR. We talked about it in the last podcast episode, episode 132. There's also a YouTube video in extensive detail all about that bike. If you
and a blog.
And a blog. Yep. Flagship XC race machine from Yeti, which you recently rode. How'd you like it? It's the most XC thing you've ridden in a while, huh?
Yeah, it was a full-on XC bike. It was efficient. We rode it on some stuff that maybe it wasn't meant for, like up a creek, but it was an adventure. And yeah, it was fun. It was just something different to try out, and it was cool. Just a little sketchy sometimes, but I'm not totally used to riding XC tires and XC brakes and that kind of stuff. But it, man, if I was going to go race an XC race tomorrow, I'd get that and just not change anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I swapped a few things out. So I swapped out brakes to four-piston level Ultimates with 180 SRAM HS2 rotors. So more pistons, bigger rotor, and a thicker rotor. So that should make a massive difference for braking. Because I think that was what's holding the stock build back a bit, is the brakes. Mm-hmm. I put my preferred XC tire combo on that. And then, bigger chainring. I don't know. I think it's kind of it. Shorter cranks.
So your bike is full flight attendant, full Axis. How many batteries on that thing? Seven batteries?
Seven batteries.
Including the shifter pods, huh?
Yeah, it has four Axis batteries and then three CR, what are they, CR2032s?
Yeah.
Two for each shifter pod, or one for each shifter pod, so two total, and then one on the power meter.
That's
but it needs them all to talk together so the system actually works as well as intended, and we will see how that starts to work, because I haven't ridden it yet. Jeff has actually ridden it more than I have.
Yeah, I rode it to lunch today. Yeah, it's cool. It's fast.
Yeah. 24 and a half pounds as it sits.
Yeah. I just still can't get over how aesthetically pleasing it looks from the drive side with no cable ports.
Yeah. And it's a raw carbon look and stuff. It's a good looking bike.
Raw carbon, and then it's very got excited. Silver Yeti decals and silver chrome axis accents to it, and man, it looks pretty sweet.
So I'm excited to ride that over the next week, and then I'm going to Moab to race Moab Rocks, and hopefully I hold my own and don't embarrass myself.
Moab Rocks.
Yeah. 3-day XC stage race in Moab. So
you think most people there will probably be on similar bikes, like 100 mil travel XC bikes?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's crazy because when I think of Moab, I do not think of XC. I think of Tech Rock Climbs,
yeah.
You know.
But same like with Downeyville. Like if anyone goes to Downeyville on a weekend, they're not bringing their 100-mil bike. They're going to bring a trail bike.
Yeah.
But then the race the king of the 100-mil bike. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know.
Try to go fast.
Pretty much if you can point that thing downhill and survive, it's going to be the fastest uphill mm-hmm. and downhill machine. So, yeah.
Cool.
That's what I got.
Yeah, true. Well, Trevor, you got some great ones.
What am I excited about right now? So I've been excited about RC cars lately. Full on nerding out on RC cars. Me and my roommate have been into it, and actually got inspired last year when I went to the TDS, the Dirty Sanchez Enduro. They have a full on RC track there, and I was kind of blown away with how fun those are and how aggressive you can get and how much you can laugh. Just dude,
they're incredibly just fun. I totally agree.
Bashing with this. RC cars. So I got one myself and been modding it and painting a new body and stuff. So that's been filling up my time and I've been having fun.
Arts and crafts.
Blue Dog's over there laughing at you.
Don't judge me. It's fun.
It is fun, dude.
It is fun.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's like a trophy truck, right? But it's a little toy.
So. Yep. But you got to drive a modern one. Like that's a thing. A lot of mm-hmm. us think of RC cars and we think of how they were when we were kids. But just if you drive one that was been made in the last like few years, it's insane. It's just like massive four-wheel burnouts for like 200 feet. Yeah. I mean, it'll break your ankles.
It's awesome.
They're rad.
I'm going on the Chasing Epic trip to Hurricane, Utah in about 3 weeks. So that should be pretty fun. Pretty excited about that. I've never ridden out there, so pretty excited to ride the 140 out there and feeling good on that bike.
Your first Chasing Epic trip.
Yeah, so you and pretty stoked for that. And then also I've been building out a personal toolbox. It's been a bit of a process just trying to figure out what tools I want, what tools I need, how much money I want to spend and if it's going to be just my bike or other people's bikes or a racer or something like that, you know. So trying to get it dialed. I got all the tools. Just need to start cutting out the foam. I'm going to do a foam insert toolbox. So having all the tools placed in the foam, having protected, I can travel with it if I want to. It's a bit of a process, but it's been fun to do that.
Yep. It's a lot of work, but yeah. It's nice.
Liam has one himself. I've been inspired by him, my roommate Blake, and a couple other guys and that are friends, and they're pretty dialed, and it's nice to work out of. So I just wanted one for myself.
Yep.
Toolbox Wars. It just reminded me of that.
Toolbox Wars.
Yeah, yep. Toolbox Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Instagram account.
I've been studying that.
Some of those are so crazy.
They're a bit over the top.
My small one.
You're into toolboxes. Go follow that Instagram page, which you were actually featured on Toolbox Wars.
Yeah, once. I think actually technically I have like one of the guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They made you a little figure. Mm-hmm. Nice.
When I was like full-time wrenching here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. The one I have in my van's a bit smaller, but it's mm-hmm. more like essentials. But some of them on there are so over the top. Like they make mine, which is pretty nice. Like I have like CNC cutout foam, like in like Abbey tools and like bougie stuff. And it makes mine look like amateur toolbox.
Yeah. Yeah. And you really don't need to go all out.
No, you don't need to at all. But
it's nice to get quality tools. But you kind of need just what you need, and that's about it. Some people have multiple tools for the same purpose, and I think that's a little bit overkill.
Yeah.
What I do like what you have is your portable toolbox that you keep in your van.
Yep.
I would like to build out one of those for myself, just so that when you're going riding or on a trip, you have just the basic essential tools that you need, and you don't have to think twice about having a tool or not having a tool. And that's super handy, and definitely has come in clutch for me using your box.
Yeah.
Many times.
Yeah, the one I keep in my vans, that's my fancier one. Like, mm-hmm. That's the one I was like, well, I'm only buying like a third of the tools. I might as well buy like a little bit nicer ones. Mm-hmm. My home toolbox, I don't have a portable one. It's just like slide out drawers, but that's like mostly just park tool stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff, but nothing like crazy. Bougie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't we make a YouTube video a long time ago about your toolbox?
Yeah, that one was fully park tool sponsored. That's what I work out of every day here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I wonder if we should make another one, like a follow-up. Your current toolbox. You know what I think people might
we could do
more interested comparison. In is rather than like a shop toolbox, but just that sort of portable, keeping your truck, keeping your van toolbox.
We should do travel a comparison toolbox between our two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Toolbox War Shootout YouTube video.
People are into it.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, if we really want to.
It's an N+1 situation.
Yeah, there's a couple friends tools. We have here, and we can bring in a couple cool insane toolboxes. Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
Wow. Tools, bro.
Wow.
Tools, bro. Well, speaking of tools, a couple of new products. One of them is a tool, new Crank Brothers SOS products.
I thought you were talking about yourself.
Oh, man. Just gets burned all over the place these days.
It up, dude.
That was too easy.
I know. Crank Brothers SOS products just came out today, actually, or the day of recording this podcast. It's a SOS, like basically, you know, send help tool line that has kind of two main kind of functions. There's a water bottle as well as a tube stash to use your accessory mount on your frame. So you have, you know, your water bottle mounts, and then some frames now are coming with that accessory mount. One, like off the top of my head, the Revel Ranger has one. So attached to the water bottle, it either can be a water bottle cage, or it's got a alloy tube with a 18-bit multi-tool in there that kind of has everything you need. A 2 through 8, a T25, a flathead screwdriver, a chain breaker, CO2 head, spoke wrenches, valve core removers, chain link storage, like tire levers.
Everything you need.
And then
always on your bike.
Always on your bike. And then also has a spot to hold a CO2 or a pump on that. And that same backing piece can either be bought with the water bottle cage or the tube stash. And then you can buy them a la carte as well. And there's also a twin tube tool that's pretty sleek. You have that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That one looks a bit sleeker. It's like kind of this metal rectangle, and these two tubes kind of like swing out bat wing style, and it has the same, I think that one's actually a 17-bit, but a 17-bit multi-tool in there. So it's pretty cool stuff. Really hard to explain this stuff over a podcast. I'm doing my best, but
it's a good solution.
Yeah,
it's a good solution for having everything you need to get out of trouble if you need to work on your bike on the trail. And just to have it always on your bike, I find myself having to constantly – I don't like riding without tools and a tube and CO2 and stuff. So I always find – I'm always going through my bag just trying to get everything in my pockets before a ride. And it's nice to have everything on your bike. You don't have to think about it. It's just less to do. And you can just ride.
Yeah, we're just talking – me and Jeff probably spent 20 minutes talking about between this setup and then the Day Saver setup, which we also have on our website – and which setup he wants for his bike. Mm-hmm. And we probably spent 20 minutes talking about that today.
Well,
the Day Saver is pretty cool.
The Day Saver is a little more cumbersome to use, but it's more compact and it's way lighter weight. It's sort of the weight Weenie's multi-tool and the minimalist multi-tool. The Crank, well, it's probably more expensive because these Crank Brother ones are very affordably priced. A little bit heavier.
Yeah.
Slightly bulkier. But yeah, that's... I'm actually really impressed that the BC-18 bottle cage toolkit is $99.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really good deal for all those tools and like a all-in-one solution.
It's pretty great for an e-bike. If you're not really worried about weight, you can just have it there and you're good.
Yeah, and it's not that it's heavy. It's like competitive in terms of weight, but Day Saver is obscenely lightweight.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty trick.
Yeah.
So wow,
those are cool. Basically 5 new SKUs, but... they kind of use like 3 bases, you want to say, and then they kind of add on from those. So, pretty cool stuff from Crank Brothers. I mean, they've been making some of the best multi-tools for
forever, man.
10, 15 years at least.
Longer than I can remember.
Yeah. So they know what they're doing when it comes to tools, and this is a great all-in-one solution. The other new products that are coming out soon after this podcast, but, you know, once it's out, new Race Face Error Wheels. So Jared and I went to Fox Race Face headquarters last week and spent a couple days riding all new Race Face products and Fox products, the Race Face Air Wheels being the first to kind of come out from that kind of release batch. Carbon wheels, kind of taking what they learned from the next wheel set, the carbon wheel set, and putting it into the era, the next era.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure that's what they meant by that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, they're just carbon wheels, trail enduro focused, a lot of emphasis into some compliance on them, pinch flat, prevention, balancing of, 28 hole. The vault hubs have a slight revision. It's a single single machine tub shell now. So before it was a two piece and there was some creaking going on in those. But yeah, I mean, we've both ridden vault hubs for a long time. The hubs are really solid.
Yeah, they're super nice.
And yeah, Jared and I rode these race face rims, and you typically am not a big carbon wheel fan when it comes to like trail bike enduro stuff.
It just hard seems, to get it right.
Yeah, it just seems to beat me up a bit. I don't weigh that much, so like I kind of get bounced around a lot, but like these felt totally good. I didn't really like think anything of them, which is good, right? You kind of want something to disappear under you instead of like
yeah, you don't want you
noticing
it.
Yeah.
Are they doing the whole 28 in the front, 32 in the rear?
Like I some companies say, are doing? No, I want to say the 28 front and rear.
28 front yep. and rear.
I don't know the exact price off the top of my head. Weight, I think they're like 1,700 grams ish range. So like typical enduro wheel set weight wise. Mm-hmm. Come with a great warranty. Yep. Kind of a, I think a no questions asked warranty from them. So.
Yeah, rims are starting to get much nicer in the mountain bike world.
Yep.
As far as like stiffness and pinch flat capability, or pinch flat, I guess,
prevention. Yeah.
It's coming a long way, so it's nice. Stuff is getting way more reliable.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of this came from their racers, many of which were on the Rocky Mountain Enduro team, who preferred the alloy rims for how they rode and felt, and also like, you know, you could smash them and keep riding them. And that kind of came into these new carbon wheels. So
cool.
They basically try to make carbon feel like alloy with the stiffness and the reliability that comes with carbon. Because actually, carbon is more reliable until it's not, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Like alloy can dent a lot and have those small issues, but like carbon's not going to dent. So
catastrophic only.
Catastrophic only, which is pretty rare these days. You don't
it's
really
not
see...
that catastrophic. Usually it's just like cracks and then.
Yeah, but like well,
yeah, it's...
a couple years ago it was catastrophic. You'd yeah. see stuff.
Well, I mean, it's occasionally, right? It still can be, but yeah, pretty rare. Yeah, now when a carbon rim cracks, just like, oh, you cracked a rim.
Exactly.
Tire was flat, whatever.
Yeah.
You don't go flying or anything.
No.
Yeah.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not. Well, rad. Good stuff. Mountain bike industry is still pumping out some cool new stuff.
Yep. It's release season, so there's even lots of new stuff coming.
Downward death spiral of profitability.
Well, hopefully it sparks.
Not your problem, it's more mine.
Sparks new interest. Sparks new interest, sales, you know, products that aren't discounted heavily.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Optimism, baby.
Speaking I've got which, it, you don't.
It's hard as a business owner. You just get beat down, like, you know, those whack-a-mole machines. That's what it feels like to own a business these days, this day and age. But, you know, my problem, which is why I'm drinking all this whiskey with berries. All right. Speaking of that, let's take a break.
Here's our sponsor.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Hello, Jeff again. I just wanted to quickly mention that this podcast is sponsored by you. If you have ever purchased from Worldwide Cyclery, Trail One, or Kettle, you have supported us, and we genuinely appreciate it and thank you. It's not the easiest to operate a small business in this day and age, especially not in the bike industry right now. And if you've ever bought from us, I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. Thank you. That's all.
And now, back to the show.
Trail Duro. That's the question.
It's on the horizon.
Read the question, Trevor.
Is that the next Downcountry, but for...
Yep.
Okay. Is Trail Duro on the horizon? Say one were to take the new Revel Rascal and swap the shock for a Super Deluxe Coil Ultimate and upgrade the fork to 150mm Lyric Ultimate. What tires would you pair with this setup?
Dude, I just put into ChatGPT, ever heard of Trail Duro? And it just immediately goes, yes, Trail Duro is a term that blends the essence of trail riding with the endurance and technical aspects of enduro mountain biking.
Wow.
And then it just is still just typing and typing all about.
How does it know that?
I don't know.
Trail Duro as a concept would likely combine the adventurous spirit and accessibility of trail riding with the technical challenges and endurance aspects of enduro riding. I don't know if it's just making all this up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not wrong.
So is Trail Duro on the horizon? Yeah, ChatGPT already knows all about it. It's on the horizon.
Well, there's kind of two questions here. Revel Rascal with a Super Deluxe Coil Ultimate, and then it comes with a Lyric stock, but you're going to bump it from a 140 to 150mm fork, which... I think the fork's a great idea. The coil can be. It's also 135mm travel, but I was having this debate with Trevor of like, dude, that Rascal's sick, but like also my Rail 29 with a Lyric is basically the same weight with a little bit more travel. So it's kind of hard to justify like making the Rascal beefier when you could just get a rail 29 and it pedals really well.
Yeah, the Rascal is like, in, after riding it, especially the V2, is really just like meant to be a playful bike.
Yeah.
It is not a smasher by any means. And if you're going to put a coil ultimate on it and a bigger Lyric on it, then you're kind of blurring lines a little bit.
You're getting really close to basically what a rail 29 would be.
That's very close to a rail 29.
And the shock extension on the Rascal, the shock yoke or whatever you want to call that, link.
Wishbone.
Wishbone, and there's like seven names for it. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite long, and Fox came out with a the yoke length to shock stroke for coil like chart.
Interesting.
And it might not be Fox or coil compatible because it is so long. So that's something to look at. It basically, it'll work fine, but basically what's going to happen is it's going to bind and cause more stress on both your frame and your shock bushings and seals.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something we should know, if the Rascal V2 is compatible with coil or not.
Yeah, I mean, till Trail Duro came out today,
it didn't
register.
Yeah, it'd be a good question for Rebel for sure.
Yeah. I'm sure it's in their FAQs.
I wouldn't put a coil shock on a Rascal.
But so that's the first part of this question. Second part, if you are going to beef that up and not listen to us, which you totally can, don't listen to us, I'd probably put like an EXO Plus or EXO Plus front or double down style of tire. That's just an easy way to say Max's kind of mid-trail casing tire.
Yeah.
Like, personally, I would do a DHR2 front and rear, EXO Plus front, double down rear. It'd be a sick combo.
That would be a fun combo.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of, right now, of the ask the guy up in the front for kind of any bike. It's just... Yeah,
it's good.
It just holds your line. Consistent. Super grippy, super soft rubber. And again, I don't know if that's the best tire to put on a Rascal necessarily. I think maybe a Dissector would be better or something of that nature. But you're just kind of blurring lines a little bit too much with that decision.
EXO Plus Assegai front max grip. Yeah. Dissector rear EXO Plus max grip.
It's pretty good.
Or Max Terra rear. Mm-hmm. Max Terra rear.
I mean, that's the setup I've been running. Except for double down rear, with the Dissector
on your 140 Yeti SP140.
Yep,
that has a 160 fork.
160 fork, 140 rear, and that's just so far it's been a great combo for me.
Yeah,
Just super grippy. I can pedal it all day long, but I think it is better suited for a bike of that travel and use case. But if you are feeling like out of control or whatever on the Rascal, then maybe some grippier tires would be a better option.
Yeah. I have that same tire combo lined up to put on the Rail 29 I have these Michelins on that are doing pretty well. So yeah. I'll wear those out, but I have that same exact tire lined up. Assegai, EXO Plus, Max Grip front, Dissector, double down, Max Terra rear. Can you remember that?
No, I went, you know, when someone says something and your brain just like blows up internally.
Yeah. You just looked, he just looked
no
through
idea what
me.
You just said.
Yeah. He just was looking through me. I could tell.
Exactly. I was, the reason part of why I was doing that was I was just thinking that over the years, bikes have gotten way more capable, as in their versatility has expanded per category. And the result of that has, they've blurred the lines into the next category. Therefore, we are starting to try and blur the terminology of them. We used to have XC bike and trail bike, and then there was this enduro bike and a downhill bike. And as each category of bike became more versatile and broadened, we've tried to invent these terms like pink bike or whoever that guy invented downcountry and now trail duro. And I don't know. I mean, part of what makes mountain biking so fun and mountain bikes so fun and enjoyable as an enthusiast sport is that you can customize them to the nth degree. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
Especially right now where you can take a bike, this guy's saying Trail Duro. I had a Rascal last year that I rode almost the whole season and I had 150 mil fork on it and pretty big tires. And that was awesome.
I think the 150 Lyric's great bump up and travel on the Rascal. I think that's a great.
Yeah, like 130 in the back, 150 in the front, some like beefy tires. That's a super fun bike. Like,
yeah. And it's 135 too, isn't it? The Rascal? 135?
It's 130.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know. The stock Rascal V2 comes with the Continental Trail casing tires, so the Cryptotol in the front and then the Zynotol in the rear, which are great tires. If I were to make that my own bike, I would put the softer compound, maybe heavier casing Continental tire, Cryptotol, in the front just to have as much traction as possible.
I think Revel's supposed to be speccing Trail Soft.
Okay, yeah, Trail casing soft compound,
at least on the front,
would be the perfect tire for that bike, which is what I would do, and then have the normal trail casing in the rear. Just that harder rubber in the front. I when I rode it personally, I felt like I was losing traction. Yeah. So I would want the softest rubber I could get.
Yep.
With some knobs.
Yeah. All right. Next question is a long one. It's also a tire question. Tire nomenclature amongst all the brands is confusing, obviously. Really? You didn't just understand what I was saying?
It's a language.
I know. But just trying to pick a tread pattern for my local trail conditions can sometimes feel challenging enough, even though it's probably pretty basic for more experienced riders. Whenever I read about certain tread patterns, I always see terrain descriptions such as best for loose over hard pack or loose to hard pack, etc. One thing I don't really see mentioned often, maybe because it's so basic, is what these really mean. Can you take a minute and help explain what exactly loose over hard, hard pack, mixed, etc.? Also, maybe what terrain means for your ideal tread pattern. Example, loose over hard terrain, do I want focus on bigger knobs to dig in or more tightly packed tread pattern? That is a deep question.
But it's good.
It is good.
It's well written.
Yeah.
It is confusing. Like you said, tires and tire casings and compounds is its own language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would defer slightly to, we've made dozens of tire videos on YouTube, and I think we've done a really good job at explaining these small nuances, and it's easier to understand on YouTube than a podcast because you can see all of the tires. However, part of his question is, what exactly does it mean? Like, come to think of it, in all those videos, I don't recall us ever sort of showing dirt. Like, we didn't film the dirt and said, this is what we think Maxxis means by loose over hard pack, when that's kind of a good point, to be honest.
We should
show the dirt.
Yeah.
Show someone fingering the dirt to understand what type of dirt this is for this tire.
What SoCal loose over hard pack is, you don't have any traction. It's concrete with dust on top. That is what I think of loose over hard.
Yeah. In SoCal, we have, that's everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's basically the trail itself is not moving. It's going to stay there forever, but there's sand on top of it or little pebbles or rocks that will make you just lose complete traction no matter what.
Yep. So that's loose over hard.
It would be funny to try and get even more scientific with it. So find a way to determine how hard the dirt is. So such as how much weight
like you need. Like the durometer of the dirt.
Yeah, like how much weight do you need to put down on a, 1-inch by 1-inch piece of steel in order for it to sink 1 inch? So like it would kind of tell you how dense it is. And then you could take a sampling size of the various little pebbles and marbles on top of it and measure the different diameters.
Wow. So when
maybe this would be helpful for this guy.
You know, for trail forks. Trail forks trail rating.
In our break, we're talking about winning the lottery. And I think if we won a lottery, we'd come up with a mountain bike soil terminology chart.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. But what we need is grants. So we need some type
of... My buddy Grant to come along and help us.
We need some type of government funded grants or publicly funded grants. Could be you. Investors. Could be you. That would be nice. This guy honestly has a really good point, and it made me realize if we make any future YouTube videos, we should actually show people the dirt in the video when we're talking about
it. We are going to do a Conti video, so we can maybe glue that in.
Yeah. So, excellent question.
So what would you choose for the best loose over hard pack? I think personally, I would go for like a softer rubber compound. I think that would help.
Yeah, completely right there. Grip. Yeah.
Yep.
If you're looking for traction as your priority, if you have a not knobbier tire with a hard rubber on it, it's just going to go over all that stuff and not dig into it. And you're just going to be sliding on it. You kind of want to dig into that stuff.
I mean, that's why I always default back to a DHR2. It's consistent in a lot of terrains. You can get it in a really soft compound. on looser or hard, you don't get any of that squirmy you get from a knob that's too soft or too tall. Like a Magic Mary, personally, around SoCal is not good. You take a Magic Mary to the P&W and it's awesome. Yeah. It's so
soil,
good.
It's a king in soft
yeah,
soil.
And it digs in and it's good. So those are that's kind of like my two really clear examples of like DHR2 knob. That knob's not squirming. It's solid. You can get a really soft rubber and it's good for like loose over hard, but also can be good for the soft soil in P&W. But a Magic Mary you take to loose over hard, which is basically like, you know, riding on super hard packed dirt, like concrete almost. And that knob just squirms and it gives you a really vague feel to me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Interesting.
But that's a good point. Your comments, Trevor, were solid. Hopefully helpful.
Hopefully.
To this gentleman. I was more just spacing out about measuring dirt and also showing dirt on film during the next
The problem is also you'll hit a trail and you're going to get all different types of conditions onto one trail.
Yep.
So it's never really going to be anything consistent unless you're on the same plot of land, you know, but it's always changing out, especially here where we live. It's always changing.
Yeah, completely agree. I would say too, this stuff, you know, unfortunately, it's just not anything you're going to figure out right away. And you just have to ride bikes for a bit more years and months to figure this stuff out and know what works and what's versatile and what you enjoy. The video I've always recommended the most, even to friends and various customers over the years, is the one video we made about tire combos, in particular Maxxis tire combos. So I kind of, we have a chart in that video that I've talked about a million times that just shows if you're really focused on, you know, speed, rolling resistance, and weight, all the way up to you don't care about rolling resistance and weight at all, and you just want the utmost of traction and everywhere in between, and then the kind of suggested combos that of the actual model tires you would use along that chart. So that was a helpful video that I think would be useful for, you know.
That was a Maxxis video, right?
Yeah, it was Maxxis. It was like best Maxxis tire combos for various different use cases. Yeah. I think that was just a good video that we made and broke it down pretty well. So if you're a, even if you're an intermediate in the sport, you can still watch that video and start to memorize and learn different brand, different model name Maxxis tires and which use case they're best used for. And then also just helps you broadly understand that like, oh yeah, okay, for an XC race bike, you are more concerned about, you know, weight and speed of a tire, rolling resistance of a tire. And as you go further down the way towards enduro and downhill, you're more concerned about traction and less about weight and rolling resistance. And concerned about durability and casings because you're smashing rocks going super fast.
It's complicated.
So yeah, it just takes time.
It's
just takes
my Facebook relationship status.
Yeah.
We have two more tire questions. Do we want to stay on tires or do we want to skip down a little?
I don't know. Hit them. Hit the tire questions. People love talking
people
about
love tires.
Tires.
All right. Hello. Love the podcast. It sounds like Liam and Jeff swap out the tires twice a day, every day. Not too far off. My question is, can you walk us through the process? I'm assuming there's a sealant cleaning process. Any good methods for cleaning on the old sealant products used or dealing with dry sealant? Do you retape rim every time or is it okay to keep the existing tape if it's in good shape? How often do you exchange the tubeless valve? Cleaning it out, I use a Stan's sealant injector. I basically pop half the tire off, suck up all that sealant. If it's like...
Is that the sound it makes?
Yeah, pretty similar. Okay. If I'm changing tires pretty often, that sealant's still good. So I suck it up, put it back in the bottle. If that tire is roached, I'll...
You reuse the sealant?
If it's only like a month old...
I do as well, too.
Yeah. Sometimes I swap out tires like 2 weeks.
That stuff is expensive, Jeff.
Sealant lasts
don't
4 months.
Don't do that on my bike.
You don't know sealant. What you do, all right? Mind your own. Yeah, if it's only like a few weeks old, like I'm swapping tires often, testing stuff, it's totally good. If it's the rear tire is worn out, which means it's been on there for 2 to 4 months, that sealant's trash.
Yeah.
In that case, I just basically soak it up with rags and put it in the trash. Retape the rim only if it's damaged or you see any nicks or you might be getting a slow leak.
It's definitely worth checking your rim to see if the tape is damaged because that will ruin your day pretty quick.
And you put on a tire, you do all this work, and then you go to fill it up and it's leaking and then it creates a mess because it's like leaking into your rim cavity.
Yeah.
Now you're going to fill your rim cavity up with sealant.
That's just not good for the rim either.
And tubeless valve itself, almost not that often. Like
Yeah, almost never.
You can clean it out pretty good with a little bit of alcohol and like a pick or like a 2 mil Allen wrench.
Mm-hmm. But the core is what matters.
But the core,
I'm constantly changing cores out.
Yeah,
now.
Like,
yeah. I'm constantly
it,
changing.
Dude, it out. Totally depends. I just put on what, I don't know what I was doing. I just put something on and this tire was even old, brand new core, brand new valve stem. And it was just so much sealant coming out of the core and like clogging it and stuff. And this was like a month old. Just like the luck of the draw. I don't know what happened, yeah. But so yeah, I don't know. Change out tubeless valve stem cores every 6 weeks to 2 months, maybe.
Or just clean them every time you
clean them. Yeah, that
yeah.
too.
Yeah,
you can clean them pretty well. Like yeah, if you want to take the time. Them. Yeah,
I mean, I think that the fact of the matter is, sealant is designed to plug any and all holes.
Yeah.
And guess what? You're opening for your valve stem as a whole. So yep. that core, no matter what, is going to get plugged. Like it just does not matter how you try and design that. I know Santa Cruz tried with those reserve Fillmore valves, and you can get more air into those valves, which is convenient, but you can't clean the valve core as well, or even really replace it.
No, you can't take it out at all. Yeah. I had those for a bit, and I'd say they probably
went. I was like, "Oh, this is so cool!" Yeah. And then I realized after a few months, like actually, I take these off.
Yeah, like they go a little longer before they get clogged.
True,
but then they get clogged, and there's no way to clean them.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's like, what do you want? You want to swap out a valve core every 6 weeks, or do you want that one $50 set of valve stems to last 6 months, and then you got to replace the whole stem?
Yeah, pros and cons of those things. I mean, I certainly won't say that they're bad, but I will say that because of the pros and cons, myself and several people here at the shop have tried them, and at first we're like, oh, this is so cool, and then yep. don't use them anymore yep. after 6 months.
So. I would say for changing tires too, it's worth, cleaning the rim, check the rim tape, and also if you're going to put the same tire back on, just take – there's going to be like a thin strip of sealant around the bead of the tire, just take that out and clean it up real good, because that could affect the seal of a new rim or whatever you're going to be doing with that. You just want it to be everything to be as fresh as you can for it to reseal overnight, preferably, but and that'll be good.
I don't scrape out sealant from the middle of the tire. That's kind of like almost your barrier.
Yeah,
that kind of like holds.
Unless it's dried up in one area, like it's been sitting for 4 months or 6 months or whatever, then take that big glob out, because that'll affect your rotation dramatically. Yeah. But just on the bead, everything else, just leave.
Cool. Our next and possibly last tire question. Hi guys, new listener here. Enjoy the mountain bike waffle a lot. I don't know if that's in reference to like mountain bike banter or the fact that I think we mentioned waffles last episode, so, and Jeff's been getting DMs waffles. About waffles. And he doesn't know
what
why.
I said about waffles or what we said about waffles.
Waffles are pretty good.
I don't know either.
I love waffles.
I do think it was kind of tangent like this, and it was pancakes over waffles.
Yeah.
I made pancakes this morning. They were pretty good.
Yeah. See, pancakes.
Why wouldn't you have made waffles? They're way better.
Because I don't have a waffle maker.
There you go. Pancakes are easier to make and easier to make good. Waffles are better. And I think if a good waffle outbeats a pancake, personally.
It's like protein waffles with some maple syrup is like the perfect pre-ride meal.
Kodiak cakes.
It's like power fuel.
Yeah, is that what you use? Mm-hmm. Kodiak cakes? Yeah. Yep. Bomb. You make those, Jeff?
No, but I've seen that brand. Maybe we should ask them if they want to be a sponsor.
I'm down.
Dude. Yeah. I also buy their like pre-made oatmeal things.
So this guy enjoys the MTB waffle a lot. Which I'm
really sure. So his actual question is going tubeless. Just bought a new XC carbon hardtail. I'm thinking of going tubeless, but I don't want gunk all over my bike. Do I have any concerns? 46 going on 25 years young.
Nice.
It's going to be messy. Tubeless is messy. That's all.
It's slightly messy, but like you're not going to get gunk all over your bike unless you get a catastrophic failure. Go tubeless, man. You can run lower tire pressure. You're not going to pinch flat. You're going to have a better ride quality. If you do have a catastrophic puncture, you will get some sealant all over your bike. It's really easy to clean with a little bit of alcohol and a rack.
Mm-hmm. I've blown up wheels before on my XC bike, and sealant did go everywhere, but I was able to clean it.
Yeah.
And you just have to clean it, and it's worth it.
And it's like once every 2 years compared to like running a tube where you're going to flat like every other ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually fairly easy to get off of your bike. It's just more of your clothes.
It is hard to brush your clothes.
It'll get your leg, your leg hairs. And
your
my skin kind of reacts to that stuff too. It just doesn't feel
well,
great.
Well, because it has some people ammonia
have latex allergies.
It's latex and ammonia.
So yeah. I think it's the ammonia. I don't think it's latex, but the it gets my skin irritated.
Yeah, he knows.
I knew that comment was coming. Latex allergy comment. If you're 25 years young, you will be more than enough energy to deal with the mess of tubeless, which it's a bit messy, but it's worth it.
The pros way outweigh the cons on that.
Totally.
Yep.
Totally. Even for someone with as much OCD as me.
Yeah.
Next question. How do you travel internationally with your bike? I'm hoping to do the Three Peaks cyclocross race in rural England in 2025 if I qualify. Cardboard box, hard or soft case. Ship or fly with it. Any advice will be appreciated.
I mean, all of those are options that everyone kind of does. The easiest and cheapest is probably get a really nice, like new cardboard box at a bike shop. Not one that looks like it's been to hell and back, but a newer one. I mean, even a lot of pros just travel with cardboard boxes. They don't use like EVOC cases.
Yeah.
If you're going to go case, I would go like an EVOC case. The hard cases can be cool. I guess actually you're on a cyclocross or gravel bike, so hard cases typically work better for those bikes than a mountain bike. But I would probably go soft case. EVOC's good. Another company I like that we don't carry but is called Aru Case, O-R-U Case. They actually make a bunch of bags that are airline friendly, so you don't actually get charged overweight fees either by size or by how light they are. So that's kind of cool. And the tip I would use is buy pool noodles from Target, because
I just use pool supplies.
Any of them, yeah. You can just wrap them around the bike. They don't weigh anything, and they really help like push away from the bike and also just add more protection than what the soft case or the cardboard box would normally give you.
Yeah, you really want to protect as much as you can. I think shipping with a case, like a hard case or a soft case, it just adds a lot of weight.
Yeah.
If you're trying to save weight, a cardboard box would be better. You just really want to, get a good one.
Yeah.
I think pro tip, call like a Specialized or Trex bike shop, and they typically ship with bigger sized cardboard boxes, and they're also pretty sturdy too if you can find a good condition one. So that would be my option, but just protect it like crazy, because you can't really do enough protection because they're going to throw it around and you don't want your bike to be like that.
I don't know if I'd ship it internationally. If you were within the States or within the same country, shipping it's fine, but internationally you might run into like imports and customs and weird stuff like that. It's way too much stuff to go wrong.
Roll the dice. If that thing gets caught in customs for even 2 weeks, your whole vacation's toast.
And also look at your airlines, whatever airline you're flying, to see their rules and regulations for oversized baggage, because a lot of them are 50 pounds or under is free, no matter the size. So you definitely want to hit that mark. Which you're on a cyclocross bike, it should be much easier. For us on mountain bikes and an EVOC bag, it's like on the
line.
You're
rolling the dice.
You're like 51 pounds every time.
The chain, the pedals, and the rotors in your carry-on.
And I bat my eyes so much to the front clerk, and 50% of the time I get charged extra.
Yeah, cyclocross bike will be no problem. Just really try to protect it. It's a pretty fragile piece of equipment.
Yep, true.
All right, last question.
All right. I'm desperate.
I am in desperate need of a proper bike rack for my car. I'm currently using a Seasucker, which works really good for my dirt jumper and my Slope Duro.
Whoa, new category.
How about that category? Ding, ding, ding.
I had a Slope Duro for like 2 months. I had one for 2 months.
However, for the past year, I have been using it for my transition repeater, which is a bit sketchy.
E-bike.
Right? Yeah. And my bike did fall over once going down the highway. Luckily, it didn't fall off.
Whoa.
I was wondering what bike rack you guys would recommend. I can only get a 1.25 hitch for my car.
Well, big tip is go to Eckhart or U-Haul and have them put a 2-inch on.
Tell them if it's a like a passenger car, will they even put a 2-inch hitch on a passenger car?
You can tell them, basically go and tell them, say, I'm only putting a 2-inch on for a bike rack. I have no intention of ever towing.
Yeah.
That's anything. Why they anything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why they don't want to ever do a 2-inch on a small sedan or car or something, or sports car, because they think they're going to like someone's going to attach a trailer to it.
Something that's way too heavy for
But them. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you have to sign a waiver or something that you're never going to do this. And they're like, hey, this isn't against our, or this isn't our policy.
They do make a ridiculous looking 1.25 to 2-inch adapter.
I know.
Yeah.
But then you add weight and length.
Yeah. And it also rattles around a lot. Yeah. So it's going to move around a lot.
Not recommended.
Like some of them are good and they actually like tighten to the side, and other ones are just like a pin that slips through and everything rattles.
Yeah.
So that would be my first tip. Go and like, really try to convince someone that a 2-inch is best for your application, which is simply holding a bike. A lot of it works for like almost everyone that says
bicycle,
not a motorcycle. Yeah, bicycle. Yeah.
The fact that he put a sea sucker rack with the e-bike is wild to me. Those sea suckers
have been past the weight limit.
Those sea suckers are pretty impressive, but I would not trust that with an e-bike.
And also, I wouldn't even mention to them that you're putting on an e-bike. Just tell them you're putting on a bicycle.
Just say bicycle.
And then, yeah, rack-wise, all of them make really good racks now. The new Thule that uses kind of like the 1UP USA system looks really good. Kuat makes really good stuff. Obviously, they make that, like, what's it called? Piston?
The Piston Press.
Piston Pro.
Piston
Pro.
That thing is nice. It's got taillights in it and a Kashima-coated shaft and everything.
Yeah.
And it's automatic. It's super nice.
Brand that I like, which no one carries, they're directing consumer, is 1UP USA. Different from 1UP components that makes handlebars and stems.
Yeah,
I really like those racks as well. They're just alloy, nothing really to go wrong.
Love the product, but one time the owner of that company was extremely disrespectful for absolutely no reason to me on the phone many years ago, and I'll never support that company. Huh. That's my 2 cents.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it is a fantastic product.
Yeah, I use the product too, and it's great. Yeah.
That's ending on a bad note there. But hopefully that was helpful on the rack question. I think we did actually make a YouTube video 100 years ago.
Best way to transport your bike.
Best ways to transport your bikes. Went over like different bike racks for different style cars and stuff. But yeah, I think we gave this gentleman some good advice for the passenger car.
I've had experience using racks that kind of latch onto a trunk.
Oh, yeah.
And when I first started riding on my mom's car. And it's not recommended. It seems like it's going to be okay, but it's really not okay at all. And it's pretty sketchy. I actually had my bike almost fall off on a freeway that way.
I've fit probably 5 or 6 BMX bikes on those back in the day.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely try to get a hitch on there.
Agreed.
By all means.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for listening. If you've made it this far, we genuinely appreciate it. Any and all questions, please email them to us at podcast@worldwidecyclery.com. And if you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we would genuinely appreciate it. It really helps us out. That's it. That's all. Talk to you guys in the next one. Cheerio.
Love you.
See ya.